Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Years ago,
I can quit my job and sell Birds Aren't Real t-shirts.
Literally, you need to do that.
Oh, man, I guess I couldn't sleep at night though.
No.
All right, let's talk about Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
Season 3, episode number 1 was Tiffany Valenti.
Yes.
I made copious amounts of notes, so I can kind of walk us through. Did you do additional homework on this one?
I did mental notes mostly, and...
Is that what you said to your teacher?
No, you should have seen my notes in school. People were like, is she done yet? And I'm like, no, I have 7 more pages.
All right, so Tiffany was 18 years old. By the way, go watch the episode if you haven't already, because we're going to ruin it for you, obviously. But the whole point, this is kind of like a book club, where you watch the episodes and then you discuss.
Wouldn't that be like a movie club? Movie club.
Yeah, book clubs don't happen anymore.
It's a doc club.
My wife's in a book club, and I'm in a true crime doc club now.
There you go.
Tiffany was 18 years old. She died by train. She was stuck by a train in Mays Landing, New Jersey. At, again, 18, she had just graduated a couple of months before Oak Crest High School, set to attend Mercy College on a volleyball scholarship in the fall.
Mm-hmm. As a starter, too.
As a starter, her mom said, yeah, which is, she's right, would be very rare. I don't think it's a big school, but still, starting freshman at any level of college, she was obviously a very talented athlete. Played softball, too. The ME, after she died, I believe it was a...
This is the Patreon, it's fine.
Yeah. That's my senile dog. She's 104. So she's probably barking at birds that aren't real.
They're not real. She's trying to tell you.
There's nothing there. The ME the next day determined Tiffany had committed suicide, which is basically the crux of the whole case of the whole episode.
Yes.
According to her family, Tiffany had been attending her cousin's graduation party on the evening of Sunday, July 12th, 2015. This graduation party was across the street from her own home. Do I have the geography of that correct to your understanding?
Yes. Yes.
So it stood out to me right away. July 12th is a strange date for a graduation party, but I understand it does happen.
Yeah, I mean, it happened for my stepdaughter and it happened for a few of my friends just because it was summertime and, you know, with all of the, it's graduation season, right. So everybody's having a party.
So, timeline here. Tiffany left the party at 9 o'clock, and the earlier media reports that I could find said 9 p.m. The episode time has it at 9:15 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
Everybody said she planned to return to the party because she had invited friends over, which is kind of a nebulous thing to me still. Initial media reports, she invited friends over and the family said they didn't know why she had invited friends over. Then they get to the episode and that's the first I've heard of any of this credit card stuff that happened, I guess. Mm-hmm. So a friend of Tiffany's comes in to the party all upset.
No.
And agitated, pulls up to the party, or the house, right?
To her house.
Which is next door.
Yes.
Right.
And asks her to come over there.
Right. So Tiffany does, mom gets involved. Tiffany is accused of unauthorized use of a credit card, which Tiffany denies until the friend leaves, and then Tiffany fesses up to her mom, according to her mom.
Yes, and I want to kind of touch base on that too, because one of the articles that I read, I believe it was the Daily Beast article, they said that she had, and I don't know, you might get into this later too, but she had previously gotten caught for stealing money from her parents. So her mom was questioning her even more because the friend and the friend's mom was there questioning her about it and she kept denying it. So I guess the mom was like, okay, I think she's lying. She goes and looks in her car. Tiffany had put it in her back pocket. She asks her what it is. She fesses up to her. And that's when her mom went inside to tell her dad, like, hey, yeah, she did steal or use her friend's credit card, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And this is the last interaction they have with her then.
Correct.
From the sounds of it. Sounds like the confrontation happens. Both the women go into the house. Tiffany comes out first at 9:28 p.m. And then a minute later, according to the father's outside camera, his deer cam, they come out a minute later with her dog and she's already gone. And the 9:28 sighting of Tiffany is where you get that spooky image, her last image of her walking away from her house down the driveway.
Mm-hmm. And did you notice with that photo that she's like looking over her left shoulder down the drive?
Yeah, and mom kind of said that it looked to her like maybe somebody had been calling her name.
Right, but also I found another article where I think it was one of the investigators or the private investigators that was working with the family. They pointed out that it kind of looks like at the left side of that photo that it's actually headlights coming around the corner. And I do see one.
On the right side, you can see that.
On the left side of the photo.
I thought it was on the right side.
Mm-mm. Here, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's a headlight.
No?
Because on the right side of that image in the documentary, they show a much brighter light, which they think might be a headlight.
Okay.
From where that headlight would be, unless it's very, very far away, I don't think that's a headlight. I think that's a street light or a driveway light, standing light kind of a thing. Could be, but I kind of doubt it. She might have had her attention drawn to the left side from a vehicle or anything else. She could also be looking to her left in sort of an upset state if she's just had this confrontation, you know.
Yeah.
Jerking her head around. I don't know. I don't think there's anything else in the picture aside from what she's wearing that you can draw too many conclusions from. It is very helpful in that way. She's
right.
Mobile. She's walking. This is what she's wearing at that time at 9:28 p.m.
Right.
There's one more thing from that picture, though. So this is where I don't know for sure, because TV production, you can't always trust the granular details that you see like this. But where it says on the timestamp of the deer cam, it says 9:28 p.m., and then they take it forward for the next image they show, which is mom and dad and the dog at 9:29 p.m. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the other data on the deer cam at that time, it is 65 degrees, according to the deer cam, at 9:28. 1 minute later, I think they have the temperature at 68 degrees. Even weirder.
I love this. I love that you went to the weather for it.
I didn't even
catch that.
The National Weather Service reporting station for this area is only 4 miles away. It's at the airport. They kind of make it sound like they live in rural New Jersey, and this is kind of a rural-ish part of New Jersey with lots of woods and things like that. But they live 4 miles from the Atlantic City International Airport, which is where the National Weather Station reporting center for the area is. At 8:54 p.m., they have it at 75 degrees. And an hour later, it's 74 degrees. That's a 10-degree difference in 4 miles, assuming everything is accurate. Assuming the deer cam sensor is working properly, the time and date stamp are correct, all that. But even if that's a big difference. That's a huge difference. And I'm not drawing any conclusions from that necessarily. And it could also be, the reason I mentioned TV production is sometimes they'll just put data up to make it look kind of more real. I don't think so in this case.
So are we talking about conspiracy theories right now? Like they altered the images, or that was from a different night or something?
So if you want to go there, the image would not be altered. The time and date settings would be altered.
Right, to make it appear as though what they said was accurate when she walked out and when they walked out.
Correct, which is a consideration when you have, of the two data points, I'm going to take the National Weather Service reporting station, and I know what the temperature was 4 miles away at the airport, 8 degrees, 9 degrees warmer than what the deer cam says. I think the most likely explanation is the thermometer function on that deer cam might not be 100% accurate, especially given the 3-degree difference, the 3-degree jump in a minute. But
yeah,
it is something to consider.
And that makes sense to me too, because she's wearing a short sleeve t-shirt and short shorts walking at night. If she plans on walking too much further, she was already in her house. Why didn't she grab a jacket if it was actually going, you know, dipping down into the 60s?
I mean, it's still warm enough, but it was also windy at the airport. Yeah. It was like 5-10 mile an hour winds, not super windy, but the wind chill would start to set in a little bit in the 60s. So I don't know. It's a thing I found. I'm not saying it means anything. The only other thing from that area, from the house area, that struck me is how hard they started searching for an 18-year-old girl who was missing from a party.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch on that too, because not only was it just missing from a party, which we see this so often, time and time again, people at these parties go missing, oh, something must have happened, and they covered it up. Well, this party was, I believe, her cousin's graduation party, and her whole family was there. So if she leaves her house at 9:28, her parents walk out at 9:29, and they start panicking right away and call her within, I think, 5 minutes, where her dad leaves that voicemail, like, I love you so much, you're my whole world. What? Like, what happened in that house between them?
So, yeah, my thinking is she's just had a fight. She's 18 years old. She knows people in the area. The newspaper, local newspaper from, I think it was a year later, like a year anniversary kind of a thing, or it was when they filed a civil lawsuit, the family, to get some information. Last seen at 9:15 and missing at 9:30. But she's not missing. She turned out to be missing. But why is she considered missing at 9:30? That might just be hindsight, knowing what happened to her later. But yeah, between 10:06 and 11:16 p.m., according to the episode, there were at least 16 texts and calls to Tiffany's phone from friends and family trying to figure out where she was. There are dozens of people searching this area around the houses, in the alleys. Her phone is found in the front yard right off the road.
Right.
I don't know, with 16 phone calls and texts and that phone lighting up, how it isn't discovered earlier, too.
Right. That was my question, too. And the fact, when bringing it back to them reporting her missing or them searching for her so quickly after, they even called family members, like the uncle, to
go
and search for her.
Her mom's house, I think.
Yeah.
Grandma's house. They went there because it's within walking distance. Maybe she went there. I don't know what's going on there. It's the opposite of what we usually see with cases in a timeline of a search and missing. And
it definitely lends credence to the fact that she was suffering mentally from, you know, mental health issues, depression, suicidal thoughts, possibly. I know that that's where this episode goes, but, you know, I have theories at the end of this as well that I want to talk about. But thinking about how quickly they reacted to that, you know, yeah, it was an important issue, her stealing somebody's credit card or using somebody's credit card unauthorized. Yeah, that's a big deal. But for it to spiral out that quickly and them to be that concerned that quickly,
it stood
out. I feel
like
something else is going on.
Well, it stood out because she's an adult. She's a missing adult, and she's been missing for a matter of minutes, not missing work the next day, not showing up to pick up her kids or some the usual tipping points that you and I see. She walked away, and within minutes, they're searching for her.
Right.
So, mentioned her cell phone, eventually found in front of her own house, 5 to 6 feet off the side of the road. And instead of walking anywhere, well, instead of returning to the party, I should say, Tiffany ended up walking about 2 miles. And along the way, one way or another, she has discarded her cell phone, shorts, and white sneakers. So she
and
was,
shirt.
And shirt. So she was barefoot and basically naked. So when she's hit by the train, she's wearing nothing but underwear, essentially. The shorts that she found, the shorts are the only thing that's never been found. All the other items are later found. The phone was found first in front of the house, and then about one, I have it somewhere, but about over a mile away, her mom, 3 weeks later, I think it was, found her shoes and her headband.
Yeah, and the way that her shoes were positioned, it was just, it's either she took them off there in that position or somebody placed them there, but we could always talk about the bottom of her feet, like how her parents talked about that, how there weren't any cuts or that her feet weren't dirty, as if she didn't take them off and then walk a mile barefoot.
It did not appear to me that she had walked a mile barefoot. I don't have a great answer for how her shoes got there, because neither situation makes sense. The two obvious situations are somebody who was involved in her disappearance and maybe murder, eventually, of what happened to her that night, put them there, but they're not thrown from a vehicle. They do appear to have been placed there, which isn't necessarily definitive. You could throw stuff out of a moving vehicle and have it land like that, but it's pretty unlikely. And at the same time, it doesn't appear to me that she walked that mile barefoot. I think either scenario is possible, but neither seems to fit. The jurisdiction of this case ends up with the New Jersey Transit Police Department. Had she been murdered in any other way, 15 feet in either direction, it would have been the jurisdiction of the local police department and state investigators. But as it was, because she was murdered or killed dead on train tracks, she's being investigated by the New Jersey Transit Police, who are not well known for their homicide investigations. I think that's a fair statement. Because one thing you can say about this is it's not treated as a death scene. No matter what happened to her, no matter how she got there, she did die there. And we've talked about what you're supposed to do step by step at scenes where you investigate that could be anything. But you start with homicide until you can rule it out.
Exactly. And it wasn't treated that way. It was not taped off as if it was a crime scene at all. It was, oh, hey, this person died. They committed suicide. Wrap the case up. It's closed.
Right. So she was struck by the train at 11:13 p.m. It is stated initially in media reports and in some of the official documents that Tiffany ignored the horn, the engineer's horn, and was struck and killed by the train, sort of lending to the suicide theory. That she was aware of the train, it was coming, it hit her, and she failed to move out of the way. The family's attorney kind of tries to poke holes in that in a variety of different ways that we can talk about. But one thing that stood out to me is the black box on the train, where we know exactly when things were pushed and when things were pulled on the train. And from any action being taken of the horn and the emergency brake to impact was 4 seconds. That's not enough time for her to react. So at least that part of the statement doesn't seem to add up. Right. If she was conscious and standing on the tracks of her own volition or otherwise, I guess. And they also make a point of the only two witnesses, known witnesses to what happened, being the engineer and a student engineer. And one sort of retracts his own statement when he's put under oath. And the student engineer seems to have been the only one who says later that he saw something, but he wasn't really quite sure what he saw. So there isn't, in my mind, a hugely reliable eyewitness to this either.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to touch on that too. I don't know if you caught it when they brought that whole aspect up where he was like, yeah, and then they retracted the story and the lady came in and she was talking about that box that you referred to. And she said that, you know, with as fast as that train was going, yeah, he said that he thought he saw her jump in front of it, but with that impact and when he saw her, it could have been from when the train actually hit her. And it's going to sound graphic, but body parts were flying. And maybe he thought that was her jumping in front of it because it happened so quickly.
Yeah, and that could be. He uses in his statement a lot of phrases, but one of them is, I didn't see her until I was on top of her. And they're kind of taking that to mean literally until the train had struck her. That's sort of a figure of speech, though.
It is.
Like, yeah. I was right on top of the deer when I hit it. So he saw her before he impacted her because of the action he took. The question is, what was he able to see in that amount of time? And that's a fair comparison that somebody in the episode makes. If you hit a deer and you have 4 seconds or less to react, what can you recount, assuming you're paying full attention, which she's probably not.
No.
And he's a student engineer, too. What are you going to accurately remember from a situation like that after you're done processing yourself and your emotions from just killed a person with your train?
Right. And then on that, too, was it the student or was it the actual conductor who said in the second statement under oath where they were like, oh, well, my back was turned.
That was the engineer.
Okay, so he was talking to the student.
They're both right in line, in lockstep on that night of. Like a half hour after, they've signed a statement saying this is what happened. Mm-hmm. Under oath is when things start to fall apart, and the engineer finally says, I didn't see any of it because I was turned talking to somebody else. I know one of the two conductors, engineers, saw the impact, but what he's able to help out with, I'm not sure. No evidence of sexual assault, but the family attorney indicates this is because no examination was conducted on her body. Seems like the toxicology was the only thing that was done, at least according to the family. Tox is negative. It's clean for everything. So she is sober when she died. From Tiffany's home to the spot on the tracks where she was hit is a distance of 1.9 miles. And there's a timeline issue I have here, and it could go into any theory, I guess. But 1.9 miles, 45 minutes to walk, conservatively. So that leaves 45 minutes unaccounted for, an hour unaccounted for. Even if you took a longer, slower route to get where she ended up, it would still only take an hour or so, leaving about half hour, 45 minutes unaccounted for. So what's good about this case from the timeline is we know the exact moment she died, which is extremely rare. And we know what time, the exact moment she left and was last seen. So we have these 2 points and exact times. In any scenario I can come up with, no matter what happened, she is doing something other than traveling for at least 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was driven there, it's even more time than that. Doesn't help out filling in the blanks, but it does tell you there is something else happening, some other activity happening for 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on how she got there.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that later too, but brings me back to how she was found, like with no shirt, no shorts, no shoes, no headband. Like she's not, I feel like somebody wouldn't just take those articles of clothing off if they were planning on jumping in front of a train.
Yeah, well, suicide by train in any way is real strange, strange, and made even more strange when she's barefoot and knowing her route and everything with the timeline that night. Yeah, there was one statement made in the episode I found that is flatly untrue. It's the woman who's the former forensic pathologist, I think she is. She's the black box lady.
Mm-hmm.
She says in the episode, where Tiffany was struck by the train is a mile from any intersection into the woods, which is just flat not true. There are 6 access intersections between the overpass that the train goes under and the crossing that it was headed toward, which is about a mile in distance. There's a way to get into the tracks through a power line cut. There's a railroad intersection. Actually, another railroad kind of intersects from a side access. There is another access road to a power station that's there. There are plenty of places for anybody to get onto those tracks. You might, depending on where in that mile you are, have to deal with a fence on one side or the other. It was dark. It was remote. The visuals that they give you in the episode of the train track itself is pretty accurate, but it's accessible.
Yeah, but then that also brings up a question of mine. Her phone is at the end of her own driveway. That's a source of light. It seemed pretty dark on that railroad track and in the woods to get to the railroad track. So how was she able to see where she was going if she walked that far by herself?
Yeah, it was super dark. But I mean, you've walked in the dark, right? In rural areas.
And it wasn't fun. I was like constantly looking over my shoulder.
It's pretty damn scary, yeah. But you can see.
You can, but...
Even on a dark, dark night, you can
see. You wouldn't do that. I feel like you wouldn't do that by choice. I feel like you would still, even if you didn't want to talk to anybody, turn your phone on Do Not Disturb and, you know, use the flashlight or something.
I see what
you mean. Because it's 2015. Like, it's not like she didn't... I mean, we know she had a cell phone. And
right.
Just one of my many questions.
That's why it's such a good Unsolved Mysteries case, because nothing makes sense. She was very active on social media, especially on Twitter, since... From 2012 to her death in 2015, over those 3 years, she had tweeted 20,000 times.
Mm-mm.
That would be 20 tweets every single day for 3 consecutive years. That's how often she was tweeting. Very active. And then, speaking of digital evidence, she had just broken up with a girlfriend 2 days before. She is sending lengthy text messages to this girl, Rachel, trying to work through her feelings for this girlfriend, now ex, who lives in Philadelphia, so it's a long distance kind of a thing. She's saying things like she felt invisible when they were together, saying how much she still loved her, apologizing for unspecified things of her side of the relationship. saying she'll forever hold a place in her now broken heart, among other things. So they're long breakup texts. At the same time, they point out in the episode that she had just started, I guess, another relationship that weekend, if she hadn't started it before. And I wonder if that's maybe part of the reason that the first relationship didn't work out. But in any event, she tweeted the night before something along the lines of she's actually in a pretty good place or something like that, right?
Right.
It was 24 hours before her death. She said she was content, is what she said. Said she probably shouldn't be feeling content, but she was. There is one spot that they kind of gloss over, but it's that abandoned building they talk about in the episode. It's an old abandoned factory, looks to me, and it's right where she is struck by the train on the other side of the tracks. So this building in the 80s was where the flea market used to be. At some point, it was obviously some kind of manufacturing something, but I couldn't find what that was. It's been abandoned since 1994 at least. And so this is where the family believes that she was actually killed, and then she was disposed of on the tracks, right next to this old abandoned building. And I will say that building does stand out for a bunch of reasons. It would be a great local knowledge place. Mm-hmm. It would be the place that a certain kind of crowd would go to hang out, I'm sure, do different things. There seemed to be, in photographs they showed in the episode, all kinds of different stuff, you know, just random items. And it would be a good place to do what they think, what the family thinks happened to Tiffany there. There are a couple of things going against that. One is it's not super vehicle accessible. And the distance from the only point you get there, which is that the turnpike, to the building itself is a good ways. It's probably a football field, which is a long way without a vehicle to carry a body. You can get through. There's not a whole lot of security. There's all kinds of places in the fence to go through. But there's a locked gate when it comes to vehicle entrance. So that spot that they show in the episode stands out to me, but it's not a perfect spot. It is pretty coincidental that that's where her body is found, though.
Yeah, and the fact that her shoes and other clothing items are found elsewhere.
At what point in some kind of, there's this theory that they talk about, this guy that worked at a convenience store overheard three kids, teenagers, talking. A year and a half after all this happened, they brought these three kids and this convenience store guy in. They interviewed the kids. Nobody claimed to know anything, no guilty knowledge. They just heard what everybody else had heard about the case. It was, they denied saying anything that they were overheard saying by this convenience store employee. But basically the story was they got her in the car somehow. They discarded her phone at the scene. And then she was forced to get naked and she was humiliated by these three kids.
Yeah, I read that theory too.
So with that theory, I don't know at what point the clothes, are they discarded on the way to wherever this happened or after the fact? Had to be at some point, obviously, before she was struck by the train. But why are the shorts in a different place? And why are they so far away?
The only thing I can think is that they were just trying to get rid of any evidence that may have, you know, any of their trace evidence on her belongings.
By leaving it right along the side of the road?
Yeah, I don't know.
They know people are going to figure out whose items they are. You can't say for sure, like that brand of shoe doesn't exist anymore and they're made out of hemp or something. They're all, an all-natural kind of a company in California. But the shoes to me did not look like, and the headband didn't look like they'd been there for 3 weeks either. I can't say for sure.
No.
So that's odd. It could be misdirection. It could be actual. Like that's where they were put by somebody on the night of the death.
Could have been dumped after to make it look like, like the misdirection thing you're talking about, because didn't it rain? And the mom didn't find the shoes and stuff for like 3 weeks. So didn't it rain between the time that she died and then?
It must have.
I think it did.
Yeah. And they're not, I mean, they're not far off the side of the road. And she says herself that she had walked that area plenty of times in those 3 weeks that her mom had without seeing the shoes, which doesn't necessarily mean they weren't there.
Right.
Another possibility is that an unrelated party put the items there for some reason. They could have been found and moved. They could have been, who knows what, but that is possible. I don't think that's likely, but it could be. What else do I have? That is basically the end of the episode. That's where it ends. So what are your theories?
Like, I can see where people are coming from with the suicide aspect in the sense that she had a lot going on in her life. Yes, to the parents' point, she seemed happy. We've seen it before. You can seem happy on the outside, be torn up on the inside, right, and suicidal. We've seen it.
We also know families don't like to believe that, even in confirmed suicide.
Exactly. And you can be this person on the outside just so that you can keep up appearances, but you could be hurting on the inside. I did read a couple articles that mentioned that there was abuse going on in the home. CPS had been called to the home even just prior to this incident happening, where a teacher had actually called CPS because of abuse happening to her by her parents. So there was some kind of tension going on in that house. So I don't think that she was as happy as they're letting everybody believe that she was. Obviously, there was something going on in her life where she felt the need to steal her friend's credit card to buy food and clothes.
And that doesn't make it into the narrative until the episode. And the only reason it's in the episode, because the episode's family side only.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else would give an interview. No, there was no sort of counterpoint that was given. There are all the family's hired experts and their attorneys and all that, and the family themselves, which is fine. But the local newspaper doesn't talk about this credit card detail. And the reason it's in the episode is because they kind of wrap it up at the end with this theory of three kids. They imply that the murder started because of that confrontation, the fight that happened.
Which I honestly don't think that's fair, because we don't know. You know, that girl may have still been her friend and just been a little bit upset with her, like, hey, that's not cool to do and don't lie to me about it. Like, that could have been the end of it. It may not have had anything to do with what happened to her later that night, but the episode made it feel like, yeah, they're definitely targeting her friend now for this. Like, she has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair.
It is a little bit strange that friends would not talk on camera. We've talked about this before. It doesn't mean anything. People, innocent people, who have nothing to do with the death of a young friend, a high school age friend especially, don't usually have a problem going on camera and talking about how great her smile was and she lit up a room and all that stuff.
That's true, but look in the day and age that we live in now. When this episode is released, what are we told? Hey, even if you're innocent, get a lawyer.
Yes.
You know, in this true crime phenomena, people are probably just trying to protect themselves. But so I can see where people are coming from with the mental health and the suicide aspect, but I don't see the whole suicide by train thing. Also, with what they had found later, I guess there was like it seemed like there was a pile of substance on the track or next to the track before, or like in the same area, I don't know, but away from where her body was actually ran over, almost as if she had already been lying there for a while.
And bleeding, they thought.
Bleeding, yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I don't think she jumped in front of a train. I don't.
You're going to carry a bleeding person some distance and then leave her there, and there's no other evidence off of the track.
Yeah, but here's another thing, though. They didn't actually investigate that scene. You talked about that at the top of the episode. So what if something happened to her further away and she made her way to the track, trying to cross over the track, because on the other side of the tracks there was a road? So maybe she was just trying to get somewhere to get help, and that's just where she ended up and was bleeding out for a while because she couldn't go any further, didn't have her phone, and then got hit by the train.
Right. Yep. I have a thought that she did jump in front of the train, possibly, but in an effort to get away from somebody.
Oh my God.
If that building is where something happens and she managed to get away, and I think there's a fence she would have to jump over, but if she, and it's not a tall fence, but if she were able to get over the fence, and by the way, whoever dumped her there, if that's what happened, has to deal with all that too, and everything else on the property, the distance from the road and all that. But if she managed to run into the woods, I'm not sure why she wouldn't run to the turnpike, but it might be because that's a big open area. And if she ran in that direction and then saw the train, she might have been trying to beat the train and slipped or fell and didn't. And then he turns around and walks away, obviously.
Okay, so like jumped in front of the train as if she's trying to get across it and buy herself some time, not to kill herself.
That, to me, is the only way that the engineer's witness, however much weight you want to give that, makes sense. She's not killing herself, in my mind, in the way that they say she did. That she was standing on the track, barefoot, underwear and sports bra, and that's it. And she hears the horn, and she's staring down the train as it runs over her. And their statements don't even say that. I mean, that was kind of the official report right away, that she ignored the horn. But they're talking about jumping and leaping and things like that. And the most of the injury on the, when they examine the front of the train, is to the bottom of it. So she's either laying down or crouched down or had jumped and when she was impacted. In any scenario where she's alive and struck by the train, where she did that to herself, I think she's trying to escape somebody. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I could see that. And I definitely think that that building had something to do with whatever happened to her as well. And I mean, that makes sense to me. I kind of thought something happened to her. She was trying to get away, bled out there and all that. But your theory kind of is a mashup with mine then, and makes sense to me that she would try to cross over that train track and just didn't make it.
It also goes into the teenager theory as to why they're not saying anything about hearing anything, because if they're just harassing her in that abandoned building, probably with no intention of killing her, and she decides to run away, and then this person gets hit by a train, what are you going to do? You know,
right.
Maybe it's at that point where they go back and just place her items in confusing places. If she still had her cell phone, probably not. They're probably right about when the phone was, would have been deposited there then. But they go sort of plant the evidence like a mile and a half away from where she just died.
Right.
They would also, it fits the local knowledge of this location, but teenagers placing a body on the tracks to be hit by a train as covering up a homicide? Nope. I don't buy that for a second. Don't buy that for a minute.
Well, I tried, okay?
Somebody else,
maybe.
I had a couple theories. An older person, maybe. A more sophisticated person, but not
teenagers. Well, right, but I never said it was teenagers.
Right.
That's just what they're saying.
Right. And all that comes from, you know, if you've done this, are you talking about it at a gas station? Teenagers, maybe, but you would think not. So, my favorite theory is either what I just explained, or that something happened right there at that place and she was put there. But the suicide, I'm not saying she wasn't suicidal and that's the reason. I'm saying the manner of suicide is the reason she didn't do it. Being in that state, totally sober, wearing almost nothing, jumping in front of a train is a dark, dark place to be. It doesn't seem likely.
Right. And of course, and they didn't investigate it as anything other than a suicide, so I'm sure nobody searched that warehouse abandoned building for anything.
Yeah, and it would be a nightmare of a crime scene anyway. You know, what's relevant? What's...
Right.
If you find blood, then fine, but it's...
But I'm sure there's a lot of blood there, especially...
Yeah, there could be. Animal blood, who knows?
Animal blood, people messing around, being stupid, falling, getting hurt, whatever. Like, it could be innocent stuff, but it could be there.
Yeah. It's not a perfect spot because of it's a wide open field from the turnpike, which is going to be busy. If somebody would notice a van peeling out of that property at that hour, for example, or even any vehicle on the property at all. But I don't know. Yeah, I think... If you pin me down, there's probably something to that rumor of teenagers being involved, whether it was those three or some others that they'd heard about at school or whatever, just people talking. And whatever it was relatively innocent compared to murder. And then it escalated to her dying.
Right. And I think, you know, obviously the parents went through a horrible, horrible experience with what happened to their daughter. But I think at the same time, as humans, they instinctually don't want to believe that there's something bothering their children so much that they didn't see it ahead of time. They didn't see that their kid was upset or whatever. So that whole suicide aspect, they're trying to find other reasons. They're trying to find other...
But I think in this case, there's reasonable cause to do that, though.
There is. But also, that's where I think they're trying to deflect from themselves. Because if those reports of the CPS thing, you know, multiple CPS visits and stuff like that, and abuse and tension in the house, I feel like they probably don't want that on them. You know, they don't want to feel like they're the reason that their daughter was upset or depressed or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah. I don't think she killed herself, but yeah. I
don't think so either.
I know what you mean.
But for them to still, you know, they listed it as a suicide, and even people going back and researching it have also said it was suicide. I can see why they would want to fight that for many reasons.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And
it's theoretically possible, but other
statistically
explanations
not
make more sense to me.
Probable, yeah.
Which doesn't, I can't rule out anything. I can't rule out she didn't walk there and kill herself. I can't rule out that, who knows, and any other combination of anything else, of other people who might have been involved. Can't rule any of that out, but I think they're way less likely than one of those two situations involving that property. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thoughts and theories, please. You can post them in the comments or email them to us, and we will revisit those next week. Next week, we have some kind of a UFO case for our unsolved mysteries. That's going to be fun. We haven't done one of those in a long time, and I don't think we've ever done like a case overview style UFO story either.
Mm-mm.
So, looking forward to that.
Me too.
If I'm still here, if they don't get me by then. You never know.
Hey, then I'll cover it. I'll just tell everybody what happened.
You wouldn't believe me. You would think I lost my marbles. I was abducted. All right. Thank you for your Patreon support, and we'll talk to you next week with our next Unsolved Mysteries episode.
Bye.